Thank you. Our next case for argument is 21-1556, Michco International versus the United States. Mr. Grayson, please proceed.
Thank you very much. Thank you all, Chief Judge and judges, especially for the courtesy and consideration of allowing me to do this argument remotely. I'm Alan Grayson. I'm here on behalf of Appellant Michco. I'm going to begin by addressing the mootness issue and the irreparable injury issues because I think that they open the door to the remaining issues. The key to understanding the mootness issue and the irreparable injury issue is found at the solicitation, in this case on page 87, which is in the record at page 1,465. The government committed in the solicitation as follows. Award will be made to a single offer whose timely offer is deemed responsible in accordance with the FAR, whose proposal conforms to the solicitation requirements, and whose proposal judged by an overall assessment of the evaluation criteria and other considerations specified in the solicitation represents the lowest price technically acceptable offer.
Counsel, it's
according
not your, counsel, this is Judge Moore. It's not your position, is it, that the government is never permitted to withdraw or cancel a solicitation?
No, but if they had done that, that has not happened here, Your Honor.
Right. So the government can, and in my personal experience, I've seen the government put out solicitations and not get any bids to which they're satisfied and then pull it back and then issue a new solicitation later on. Is that also a practice that you're familiar with?
Yes, Your Honor, I am familiar with that.
So I guess I'm trying to figure out what's going on in this case. In your brief and a footnote, you kind of suggested the government has not, in fact, canceled this solicitation. But then somewhere in their brief, I thought they alleged there was no longer a contract or a solicitation. So what I can't figure out is where do things stand right now as a factual matter?
There is an outstanding solicitation. It has not been canceled, Your Honor. If it were canceled, it would be canceled by amendment issued to all offerors. There has been no such amendment. What's happened is that the contract that was wrongly issued to the competing company, Cover, has been terminated. That's where things stand concerning Cover's contract.
Well, yes, but this is, counsel, this is for food service, right? I mean, we can't have an army base with no food. So a contract is going to have to be awarded at some point. Is that right?
Yes.
And do you believe that contract, or you, is it your company's position that that contract is going to be awarded, or your belief that it's going to be awarded by virtue of the bids that were submitted and are pending in light of the current non-canceled solicitation?
Absolutely, Your Honor. That's correct. Michco was next in line for award that is undisputed.
Well, but there were, well, when you say next in line, there were, please, somebody jump up if I say something I'm not supposed to. But I believe I understand there were five submissions and three deemed acceptable or that crossed a particular hurdle. I'm trying to speak in ambiguities so that I don't mess up anything that might be confidential. Is that accurate, what I'm saying? Is that accurate?
Yes.
So if you think there's an open solicitation, and if the government is right now considering which of the bidders to award the contract to, then isn't some of the forms of relief that you've sought in your complaint now premature? Forget about mootness. Aren't some of them premature? Like you wanted your bid preparation costs. Well, you're still in the running for a contract you very well might get. So why would...
Your Honor, there's... I'm sorry to interrupt.
Oh, please, go ahead. Explain to me the facts.
There is no evidence that the government is actively considering an award to Michco or to anybody else. Michco was in line for award because its lowest price technically acceptable. Michco was determined to be lowest price other than Cover and technically acceptable among the offerors. But there is a complete lack of interest on the part of the government right now to proceed with the procurement. And that's unfortunate. That's why we need to have court intervention.
Okay, so this is what I don't understand. It's food service. These people have to eat. So how can you say
yes,
there's no interest in providing a contract? Because doesn't the government sort of have to get a contract in place in order for people to eat?
The government has arranged for a short-term contract under a separate logistics contract that covers logistical services that include food, apparently.
And
so there's a short-term fix in place, like a bridge contract.
And that's not, is that to Michco?
No, it's not.
Okay, it's to somebody else. So there's a short-term bridge contract in place, but it's your understanding that that only exists until December?
No, I'm not sure how long it exists, Your Honor, but there's been no movement at all toward going back and making award to Michco as the next in line for award under the original solicitation.
What would happen here if the government had canceled the solicitation entirely? Would that moot the entire case, including the request for bid preparation costs?
It would not moot the request for bid preparation costs at all, Your Honor. That's exactly when we would be entitled to bid and proposal preparation costs. But the answer to your question, Your Honor, is that we would protest that. If there were a cancellation, we'd protest that. That would not be appropriate action by the government at this point. We're next in line for award. They should just go ahead and do it.
But if they cancel the solicitation, the claim for equitable relief would become moot, wouldn't it?
I think we, at that point, we would have to file a protest against the cancellation. So the answer to your question, Your Honor, is yes, with that caveat.
So, I mean, government can't avoid normal contract procurement process, i.e. solicitation and evaluation of bids, by extending a short-term contract indefinitely. Is that right?
That's exactly why we're here today, Your Honor. That is exactly correct. They need to go ahead and finish the job.
What if they were to cancel the solicitation and issue a new solicitation, allowing other contractors to submit bids? How would that affect your case?
That would mean that we would protest that action, probably in a separate action, Your Honor. We would stand by our request for proposal preparation costs in this action. And in that action, we would be arguing that that was arbitrary and capricious and contrary to law because a federal statute regulates the cancellation of solicitations, does not apply and authorize that in this situation, and the government can't cancel without a good cause. That would be a bad faith cancellation, if you will, since Michco is ready, willing, and able to do the work and is next in line.
But that
would be a different case.
Yes, but the cancellation has not happened yet, Your Honor, but that would be a different case.
In order for you to get your bid preparation costs, don't you have to establish that you were meritorious in your bid protest? I mean, as of now, the contract to KOVR has been canceled, or they were in breach, but not for the reasons that you argued ought to have resulted in you getting the award as opposed to them. It was independent of those reasons. So in order for you to get your bid proposal or bid preparation costs, don't you have to establish, you know, being correct on the merits?
Yes, Your Honor. And in fact, Your Honor is exactly correct. What's happened is that under 13 CFR section 121.1009G2I, the government was required to terminate the award to COVR. It did terminate the award to COVR belatedly, and for a different reason. So in fact, what we were asking to happen here has happened here. There has been a termination under that particular merits argument, but the government doesn't concede it was for that reason. The government claims it was for a different reason. And there are other merits arguments that we made that would justify proposal preparation costs here, Your Honor.
But I don't understand. If the government canceled the contract for a reason that differs from the reasons that you were arguing it should never have been awarded in the first place, then why would you be entitled to your bid preparation costs?
If that were the case, I think that we wouldn't be, but that's not the case. We were correct on the merits here regarding section 121.1009. The words mean say there is no contradiction between that SBA regulation and the Randall-Shepard Act minor preference that's given to COVR. So if the court were to determine that we're right on that issue or any of the other three merits issues that we raised,
So is it your view that in order for us to reach the whether or not you're entitled to your bid preparation costs, we first have to reach the completely moot issues of whether KOVR should have been awarded the contract in the first place?
I would not say that they're completely moot.
Counsel, they have to be moot. KOVR doesn't have a contract anymore. They're out of it. So whether they should have been awarded the contract or not is a moot issue because there's no more contract for them.
That's a fair statement, Your Honor.
So is it your view that I have to reach an issue like that that I think is moot, whether or not the lower tribunal erred in deciding that it was not improper to award it to KOVR? I have to go through all of those merits of what I think is a moot issue in order to reach the question of whether you should be entitled to your bid protest fees?
Your Honor, this is not moot. The award has not been made to Michiko. Only if award were made to Michiko would anything be moot in this case.
What's moot is whether or not the government should have awarded it to KOVR in the first place, because the contract's gone and KOVR is gone. So whether they should have awarded it to them is moot. And that was your argument upon which you predicated, in large part, your bid proposal cost request. So what I'm trying to figure out is, since the contract hasn't been awarded to anyone, do you really have any basis for bid proposal costs? Because that bid may still very well be active, may still result in you getting an award of the contract. So it would seem quite odd if we were to suggest you were entitled to bid proposal costs and then a month later the government actually awarded you the contract on the basis of the very bid that we just gave you proposal costs for. Do you see my problem?
I do, Your Honor, but I think that's counterfactual. There is no indication that the government is giving any active consideration right now to an award to Michiko, and that is the nub of the problem at this point.
I think there are two separate issues as to mootness. One is mootness of the equitable relief, that is your right to the award, and the other one is the bid preparation cost. And there would there would be an issue as to bid preparation cost whether or not the contract was canceled, because you incurred these bid preparation costs in the course of challenging the award to cover.
That is correct. I would say that if award were made tomorrow, we would no longer have a valid request for bid proposal and preparation costs. We would have a valid request under the Equal Access to Justice Act for attorney's fees, but that's a separate matter.
Equal Access to Justice Act attorney's fees can't prevent it from becoming moot. It would only be the bid preparation costs.
That is my understanding of the precedent, Your Honor. I agree with that statement. Would you all like me to address the merits issues in this case? It seems like the court is focused on the issue of what's left to decide, and I would simply reiterate in that regard that we're in a situation where, as the court's pointed out, food is still being served to the troops at Fort Knox, and it's not being done by Michiko. If Fort Knox were to close, the case would be moot. If food were no longer provided by the Army of Soldiers, the case would be moot. Neither one of those two things happened, and the Army is stuck not making any movement toward making an award to Michiko at this point, so the case is not moot in any real sense as far as Michiko is concerned.
I have a question about the PIA argument. Let's assume you're right on the statutory construction, and it applies to persons other than government employees. I'm not understanding how the act was violated on that theory. I mean, certainly, Cobra had a right to this invoice that you say was improperly in their possession. I don't understand how an invoice for work under another contract can somehow be a violation of the PIA.
I'm sorry, but I couldn't hear the question clearly, Your Honor. I apologize.
Okay. I'm asking about the PIA violation, and I'm saying, assuming you're right on the statutory construction, that it applies to persons other than government officials, how is it that the act was violated here? This invoice didn't relate to this contract. It related to an earlier contract, and certainly Covert was properly in possession of an invoice. And I cannot see how that could possibly violate the PIA for them to have an invoice that you sent to them.
Let me correct the record in that regard, Your Honor. There were unauthorized site visits that were violating the PIA. COBRA's assistant manager walked on site. This is COBRA's assistant manager, not Michiko's. Walked on site, reached inside a desk, took out a staffing document, put it in his pocket, and walked away. That's a PIA violation. In addition to that, they took staffing.
What document was that? What document was that? What document are you contending COBRA improperly had?
Well, the document that COBRA took from the work site was improperly taken. And in addition to that, there was...
Yes, but we want to know what document it was. I mean, if they walked in and took a napkin, it doesn't matter. What was the nature of the document?
It listed all the staff and their contact information.
That's it?
And by doing so, gave them important information that they used in preparing their proposal. They used the pricing information, they used the staffing information. As the lower court noted,
the pricing information is in your own invoice. The pricing information is in the...
The invoice is one of a half a dozen different documents.
Okay, but you have to agree that they properly had possession of an invoice that you sent them, right?
Yes.
Okay, so what document did they improperly have possession of that had a bearing on this contract?
The information on staffing and the information on pricing. The invoice is only one of several.
Wait, the information on pricing was attached to the invoice.
No, Your Honor, there were multiple documents involved here, not only one invoice. That's not. I mean, the documents are actually in the record. You can see.
I've looked at the documents in the record, and I don't understand which pricing document you're talking about that wasn't part of the invoice.
Okay. Your Honor, as best as I can remember at this point, we're talking about the documents that listed the staffers and how much each one was being billed at and gave a breakdown how to put together a proposal that would cover the entire requirement. That's much more than invoice. An invoice is simply...
Where is that document in the record that you're talking about that wasn't attached to the invoice?
Let me see if I can find that, Your Honor. I don't have that reference in my notes, Your Honor. I'm sorry. I'd be happy to provide it for you after the fact.
Counsel, can I ask you a question while you're looking for that? Why isn't KOVR entitled to that document as the primary contract holder on the earlier contract?
Because KOVR is entitled... KOVR was entitled to, other than the stolen staffing document and the on-site visits, KOVR was entitled to the documents itself. KOVR was not entitled to share them with the de facto offeror here in New Southern Food. If KOVR had kept those documents, we would have never alleged a PIA violation at all. But the PIA was specifically, expressly concerns the distribution of documents to punitive subcontractors. Potential subcontractors. It's in the statute itself. So the PIA was violated not when COBRA got the documents, but when COBRA gave them to Southern Food, according to FAR 3.104-7 and the statute itself, the PIA.
Okay, counsel, we are way beyond your time. Let's hear from opposing counsel.
Thank you very much for the extra time, Your Honor.
Mr. Grayson's not here.
Sure, that's fine. Whichever one of you is Mr. Schumacher, I have him as going first.
I think it's Mr. Schroeder from the United States.
On my list I have Mr. Schumacher for 1 minute and then Mr. Schroeder for 14. Is that not correct?
I think our intention was for the government to go for 14 and the intervener one to follow us, though.
Okay.
That's okay.
Well, if you use up all the time, he doesn't get any, just so you know.
Okay. Thank you. May I just get a little water there?
Sure.
Thank you. May it please the court. May it please the court. Turning to the issue of mootness.
How can this case possibly be moot as far as the bid preparation costs are concerned?
Because
equitable relief. I mean, bid preparation, the recovery of bid preparation costs is something you're entitled to under the statute. Why doesn't the claim for bid preparation costs remain active, even if the request for equitable relief is moot?
Because in this case, the contract itself has been terminated for reasons other than the bid protest, and this is a long-term contract that was awarded, 5-year contract with a 6-month option, and a bid protest that is otherwise moot on its merits does not continue to present a case in controversy merely because the court can award bid preparation.
You're quite mistaken about that. If you look at the history of this statute originally, all you could get was bid preparation costs. And there are plenty of cases from us saying that the claim for bid preparation costs creates a case or controversy. Are you familiar with the history of the statute?
To a degree, Your Honor. I'm looking at the cases that have held otherwise, and also...
What case has held otherwise?
Glenn Defense, which is an unpublished decision, but nonetheless 2012.
Veterans Contracting? Or what? Another case?
Pardon me?
What cases from our court?
Well, that was Glenn Defense is a federal circuit from the Court of Appeals Federal Circuit case. And here also, before they can get bid prep costs, they have to they have to win on the merits. And here,
well, of course,
there's
that's
a judgment.
Why it's not moved.
Well, Your Honor, there's a judgment. And the way this became moot, if I may, there was a judgment issued on every single claim they raised in the lower court, and then they never sought a preliminary injunction. They didn't oppose the award going forward to COVAR, and then for reasons entirely unrelated to corrective action or anything like that, which is the typical bid protest, is where the contract gets terminated for convenience. This contract went on and was, and then Michiko was a subcontractor on it. And the Michiko itself, who is...
I'm sorry, I don't understand what you're saying. There's a claim for bid preparation costs, right?
There's a claim for bid prep costs.
Because the government messed up in making the award, right? So what difference does it make that the contract is ultimately terminated in terms of the ability to recover bid preparation costs?
Because there's the government has not been proven to have made any error. So
that's the point. That we have to determine whether there was an error or not.
The Court of Federal Claims did, and they determined there was no error.
On appeal, in addressing bid preparation costs, we have to decide whether there was an error or not.
Well, I would respectfully disagree because there has to be a bid preparation cost is a remedy. It's not a separate claim. So
if you look at the history of the statute, it is exactly a separate claim. You didn't used to be, you couldn't get equitable relief. You could only get bid preparation plus. That was the entirety of the relief you were entitled to. That was the only claim you could assert. It doesn't become moot because there's no ability to remedy the contractual violation by equitable relief.
I don't want to just go around and around on this because yeah, I understand your position, Your Honor. Of course, the court is the decision maker. We believe that the...
Okay, well, let's talk about the equitable relief. This contract was canceled, but the solicitation wasn't canceled, right?
Well, Your Honor, there's no FAR provision that we're aware of that requires the formal cancellation of a solicitation under these circumstances. Again, the contract was awarded. No one ever sought to enjoin the award of the contract. The solicitation is no longer an act of solicitation. Mr. Grayson, I believe, acknowledged that, so I don't think there's any disagreement.
Well, that's what I was trying to understand is the factual scenario about whether or not his request for bid preparation costs might be premature. The government's got to provide food to this Army base. So how is it providing food currently?
Through bridge contracts. And through a bridge contract, which is, to our knowledge, has not been protested by Michco. And
was it the subject of a solicitation?
I think it was a sole source bridge contract that was issued back in July, is my recollection.
If it's a sole source, they can't bid protest because they didn't get to bid. Can they?
I don't know if they can. However, I believe it was publicly disclosed that
this
was happening.
But you just made a point about they didn't challenge the bridge contract, and I'm wondering if they even can challenge the bridge contract.
I had assumed when I said that they could, but I've heard of challenges to bridge contracts, but I don't know. It's not an issue that we were focused on here, so I couldn't actually...
Does the government not intend to have another solicitation or to evaluate the bids of the current uncanceled solicitation?
Mr. Grayson's correct. The government is not moving forward on the canceled what has been referred to as the uncanceled. However, it's constructively been canceled. The government has moved on from that solicitation. It doesn't intend to proceed on that solicitation. The solicitation is now almost exactly 2 years ago. It was awarded before COVID. It's stale and...
Why did you cancel the solicitation? I don't understand.
Because the contract had already been awarded and performed and terminated, so solicitations under these circumstances, they don't simply kick back in on their own, and
kick back in on their own if we say that you erred in awarding the contract to Cover and you need to go back to the drawing board? Doesn't that start the proceeding under this solicitation then?
Well, the agency... it is up to the agency to determine whether to the type of action, and the agency has not made any steps to reinstitute this solicitation. I believe the offers are long expired. There was never any preliminary injunction sought.
Can I make sure I understand the facts? You said the contract was awarded and already performed. I thought that the breach occurred while Michco was still the supplier. Am I wrong? Do I have those facts wrong? Had the transition occurred and had Southern started supplying food under the new contract prior to the breach?
Yes, let me explain that. Michco has long been and was on the prior contract,
right,
a subcontractor,
yes,
performing most of the actual work.
Right, I understood that. Yes.
And Kovar was the... So when Culver's contract got terminated. Michiko subcontract got terminated, in effect. However, yeah. Michiko, the reason that Culver's contract was terminated was because Michiko indicated they would no longer provide those subcontracting services.
Because they weren't getting paid. But in any event, let's back up. What you said is the contract was awarded and performance had begun. I didn't think, as a factual matter, performance had begun already under the new awarded contract to Culver. Am I mistaken about my understanding of the facts?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, that's what I needed to know.
I apologize, I'm not clear. The contract was awarded, work was begun. It went on for, I believe, many months before this issue arose. Michiko, who was at that time, even on the new contract, acting as the subcontractor.
That's the part I didn't understand. I thought that the new subcontractor was going to be Southern, so that's the part I didn't understand.
Yes, and again, I can fill that in, Your Honor. The new subcontractor was supposed to be Southern, but Michiko got injunctive relief in Kentucky State Court prohibiting the COVAR, which is an agency of the state of Kentucky, from replacing Michiko with Southern as a matter of state law, because apparently they didn't go through the Kentucky procurement.
Who knew there were so many places where these things could be challenged? It is quite a surprise to me. Can I ask you a really dumb question? Why are you awarding all these contracts to KOVR when they're not actually the one performing? Why aren't you going straight and awarding them to the subs? Why not award it to Michiko? Why not award it to Southern? What? It seems like KOVR is just taking a slice of the pie and thereby increasing the cost to the government of the contracts. What am I missing that I don't understand about these contracts?
Yes, and these contracts are a Randolph-Shepard Act contract, and the purpose of
I don't know what that means. Sorry.
The purpose of the contract is to allow blind individuals to engage in government contracting. So COVAR is a state of Kentucky agency that...
Is this the thing? I remember reading somewhere that they employ one blind person, and there was some ruling that there has to be one blind person per cafeteria or something. I don't recall the specifics, but I do remember reading something about that. Is that part of what was involved in the state court action?
I'm not sure who was involved in state court action. So that was one of Michiko's arguments here.
Oh, okay.
That they were required to have one blind individual at each location.
That's the joint statement of policy, right?
Yes, and that the trial court rejected that. But the purpose of the whole contract, the overriding purpose, is to help blind individuals be government contractors. So the solicitation was issued as sort of a hybrid between...
When you say to help blind individuals be government contractors, this individual is just a worker at KOVR, right? This isn't like, you know how small business or women-owned contracting or minority-owned contracting. This is just a... KOVR is a large organization that is... Is it... How? I don't understand. Is it owned? I'm just trying to understand
Yeah, KOVR is an agency or an office, the government office or agency of the state of Kentucky.
I see.
And the blind person is the...
Is the vendor. They're not an employee of KOVR. They're actually the vendor. And then, so there are multiple levels of subcontracting. I think that Michiko was, and Southern would have been, at least the second level.
I understand now. So to be clear, KOVR isn't actually providing any of the food services, or are they partnering with their sub, whether it be when they used to be doing it? What were they just a layer on top of oversight and then they sub it out, or were they partnering and participating in the delivery of the food
services? KOVR is a state office that supervises this, but they're not actually providing the services.
Okay.
It's a program to help the blind. And
yeah, I'm really troubled with the idea that you can moot a bid protest by improperly awarding the contract. to one party who shouldn't have had it, and then terminating that contract. And, you know, that creates all sorts of possibilities for manipulation, such as, you know, you think you're going to lose the bid protest, so you moot the whole thing by canceling the contract. I'm not sure that that's proper, appropriate, or legal.
Your Honor, that's actually, that was in the CCL case. The court expressed concern about that. And so that is, can always be a concern. But in this case, this had nothing to do with the litigation.
Well, we don't
or
have
the
to
pro-
determine that it was an improper motive. I'm just saying, how can it be that the government can moot these challenges by canceling the contract?
Because the government, in this case, the government effectively didn't moot it, because what happened was when Michco, who's the subcontractor, walked off the job.
I don't think you're addressing my question.
Because
it wouldn't be any different whether, for mootness purposes, whether the contractor walked off the job or you decided to terminate it for cause or for convenience or whatever. I mean, under your mootness theory, the whole controversy goes away once the contract is canceled. I'm not sure what the authority is for that.
Your Honor, and I'll do so rapidly since I see my time is up.
No, it's important. Don't worry about the time. We want to try and figure this out. It's a very hard case.
Okay, so in this case, Kovar was, and the government has to provide these food services to a very large number of service personnel. And in this case, Kovar said we cannot provide adequate assurances that after, I believe it was June 4th.
I don't know what the facts of the case are, but I don't think you're addressing my question. My question is, how can it be that the government can eliminate a bid protest and say we don't have to worry about that just by canceling the contract for whatever reason? How can that be?
Because if there's no bad faith and it's done properly, and it's
as long as there's no bad faith, you can moot the bid protest by canceling the contract.
But it wasn't done to moot the protest. It was done because they needed to be able to feed the military personnel.
What case says that you can moot the bid protest by canceling the contract?
Those are cases that essentially, for example, Kingdomware said normally when the contract is completed, it would moot the bid protest, except for the fact that in that case, the contract's term was for less than 2 years, where in this case, the term was for 5 years, and there was an intervening event.
2025, right?
Excuse me?
2025, something like that. Right.
Something around there, yes. But what happened was an intervening event, which is what causes mootness, occurred that was unrelated to the solicitation.
But here's the problem. The problem is, and maybe your answer should be, then the answer to the concern Judge Dyke has and that I share is that Michco should challenge the sole source award to Southern. Maybe that should be your answer. But his problem, which I share, is it's really troubling to say this whole bid protest is moot because KOVR is now out of the picture and the contract has been breached and so it's no longer in force. Now, there were only two other contract or bidders who submitted bids that met the minimum requirement. It seems pretty clear the second place bidder was Michco. The third place bidder was Southern. And the contract, and I hope I didn't just do something that was supposed to be confidential. If I did, I apologize. Somebody's got to tell me if I did. Did I do something wrong? Nobody's saying anything, so I'm going to assume it's not confidential.
Well,
okay.
Agency counsel is in the audience, so.
Well, I mean, somebody would jump up and down and say something because I can always strike it from the recording if I've said something improper. But, you know, that breached confidentiality, I mean. But there was a contract. KOVR came in first, Michco came in second, Southern came in third. You awarded the KOVR. KOVR then breached and were kicked out. So now you're left with Michco in second place, Southern in third. Instead of awarding it to Michco, what you did is somehow justify sole source, probably because of the urgency of needing food, and then chose the third place person. That feels wrong. Now, if you want to do that, it feels okay, but it feels wrong to say that process leaves Michco without any avenue for challenging the propriety of that process. Do you understand the problem?
Yes, well, it wasn't awarded to a third place person.
Southern.
Michco, Southern wasn't even an offeror in this.
Oh, I thought Southern was the third place offeror.
No, there's another offeror whose name I
okay,
don't mention.
It's a different
okay.
person.
Then I got it wrong.
So,
right.
So again.
But does that make it, that doesn't necessarily make it better, by the way, that the person you awarded it to didn't submit one of the original bids and wasn't one of the top three choices. I'm not sure that actually made it better for you. You should have left me delusional.
But the other issue is that Michco, remember, was the subcontractor performing the work. They walked off the job, and I know that's a sensitive issue as far as mootness. However, Michco, had they not walked off the job, the contract would probably still be going on. And I'm not pointing a finger at Michco.
Maybe because they weren't getting paid.
I'm not pointing a finger
like
at Michco. Michco made a business decision.
If people don't get paid, they stop working usually.
It feels like not a business if you're not getting paid. I don't know.
But Michco's, you know, Michco's showed no right to an award. All they did was come up with a competitive
were
rank.
Were they or
so
were they not second
more...
in the rankings? I thought there were rankings, and it was undisputed they were second. Is that correct?
I believe they were second. However, there was only a competitive range determination, so there's a whole lot more to be done.
I thought the solicitation expressly said it was going to go to the top-ranked offeror, and that KOVR was top-ranked, and Michco was second. And
KOVR was in the, they were going to do a competitive range determination. And then based on the competitive range determination, under the priority, the state licensing agency, COVAR, if they were in the competitive range, then the agency would negotiate with them first. And if the negotiations were successful, then the award would go to COVAR, which is what happened.
Okay, but if COVAR were out of the picture and they claimed that it should have been disqualified, if COVAR were out of the picture, this contract would have been awarded to Michco, right?
I believe it's premature to say that because they were only in the competitive range. So then there would have to be a determination whether to award it to Michco. There may be negotiations. It didn't get past beyond the competitive range determination and then negotiations with COVAR. And at this point, now 2 years have gone by. So the agency still needs to assess its needs. There's been a pandemic in between this contract being awarded in February of 2020 and now. So they have that has to be accounted for as whether running a very large...
You could cancel a solicitation, but you didn't.
There's no requirement to cancel it, but I think this is effectively, constructively canceled. Solicitations, as far as... the agency understands that the solicitation is no longer an active solicitation. So,
okay, so why don't you focus me for a second on what is the relief that Michco could potentially be entitled to? They asked for 5 forms of relief in their original complaint. It seems to me that if the solicitation is effectively canceled, that the first form of relief, a declaration that KOVR should never have gotten the contract, is moot. The solicitation's canceled, the contract's gone. The second one, if I'm remembering right, is that Michco should be deemed the second highest. But again, if you're telling me the solicitation is effectively, constructively canceled, what would be the point of such a declaration? That seems moot. These are what Judge Dyke referred to, I think, as the equitable forms of relief. And then when we get down to bid preparation costs, why isn't that still a live issue? They put a lot of money into preparing their bid. Under the circumstances, they were the second highest bidder, and you've decided to constructively cancel the solicitation. Well, first you awarded it to someone else, and now you've decided to constructively cancel it. Why aren't they eligible to argue in favor of bid preparation costs?
Because... The case is, in our opinion, moot as of now, and they haven't, Michco's never secured a favorable ruling on any issue. So what Michio is saying,
so why isn't the answer, but those, the things you say they haven't secured a favorable ruling on are exactly the things that are on appeal to us that I said were moot, i.e. don't affect actually the award of the contract. But isn't this kind of like attorney's fees? Sometimes somebody wins and then they want attorney's fees on appeal, and I have to look behind the win and to see whether they should get the attorney's fees. I actually have to look at the thing that is otherwise moot and that I no longer need to decide in order to assess whether they should get attorney's fees. Isn't that kind of like this? Maybe those equitable issues were mooted, but maybe I have to actually go ahead and decide them anyway in order to get to whether they should get bid preparation costs. Because if I'm convinced they're right and they should have been the awardee, not KOVR, then they would be entitled to bid preparation costs, wouldn't they?
Well, the purpose of bid preparation costs is to remedy a situation where somebody has wasted their efforts. But here...
That's exactly the point.
But
we have to determine whether the government behaved improperly to determine whether they should get the bid preparation costs.
But it would require a decision on the merits.
Well, sure, that's the point.
But we've already had a judgment against Michio, and they did not object to the award of the contract. They did not seek a preliminary injunction. So they basically did not take steps to stop this. So they allowed this to continue on.
I don't understand what you're talking about. They filed a bid protest.
But they did not seek a preliminary injunction because they were the subcontractor, and they did not object to the commencement of work.
They didn't get bid preparation costs because they didn't seek a preliminary injunction? You got it exactly backwards. The whole point is that by only seeking bid preparation costs, if they never asked for an equitable relief, they'd have a perfect claim. You can claim nothing but bid preparation costs. I don't care about the contract anymore. I just want my bid preparation costs. That's a cause of action. That used to be the only cause of action under the statute.
No, I understand your point, Your Honor. But in this case, there is no longer, in our view, a live case or controversy because even in the EJIA cases, where the agency takes corrective action and cancels a solicitation, bid preparation costs, EJIA is not available for the same type of logic.
The right to EJIA fees can't prevent it from being moved. That's correct. But bid preparation costs are different. They're a form of contract damages. The statute refers to them as a form of contract damages. The history of the statute refers to them as a form of contract damages.
Your Honor, I understand. I think it still continues to be for reasons set forth in our.
Okay, you're off the hook. And Mr. Schroeder, you get your hot seat, or Schumacher, you get your hot seat for 1 minute. 1 minute. And now no one's ever going to believe me. It's like when I tell my toddlers they can't have something and then I give it to them anyway. Come on.
Well, Your Honor, I'll go ahead and I'll limit my time to your questions about the Randolph-Shepard Act and COVAR's involvement as state licensing agency. The Randolph-Shepard Act is supposed to provide remunerative employment, and it gives a prior right to cafeteria contracts on federal property to the state licensing agencies and the
What does that have to do with what we have to decide today?
Well, it ties in. If the court has to...
You get 1 minute, but it's only if it's going to be useful.
All right, I'm sorry. I was trying to answer your questions you had about the Randolph-Shepard Act and COVAR's relationship. The blind vendors here and the state licensing agency, which COVAR is...
Why does the Randolph-Shepard Act, whatever it's called, trump the small business preference? That's the question.
Well, first of all, because the solicitation says it does. If the record... 1,747,000. The solicitation specifically said, all offers are hereby notified that the RSA applies to the solicitation, therefore a priority will be given to the state licensing agency pursuant to the RSA. And B to that was a competitive range shall be established after initial evaluation of proposals. If the state licensing agency, the SLA, is determined to be in the competitive range, then the SLA will be afforded the priority as delineated in the RSA. If they're not determined to be in the range, then successful offeror within the competitive range will be selected. Everybody was on notice that if the SLA put a bid within the competitive range, it would be awarded the contract, not a small business, not a small business set aside. The Randolph-Shepard Act, the statute itself, gives blind vendors and state licensing agency a priority to operate cafeterias on federal property.
And nobody objected, just to be clear, nobody objected to that solicitation language, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Yeah, because that's the key.
Yes, Your Honor.
That okay, is, see, that it turns correct. Out you were helpful. Now your minute is long over.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate your time.
All right, now we get Mr. Grayson back. Hopefully we haven't lost him. Good. You want to try leaving him and see if it doesn't mess up? Okay, you're taking time. All right. All right, Grayson, to keep the time fair, you've got 75 minutes. Go. It was a joke. Joke.
Your Honor, I'm very grateful for the 4 minutes that I see posted. Thank you very much. This is possibly the most considerate.
You can go over if you need to.
Mr. Grayson, could you address some of these mootness questions on an issue-by-issue basis as you deal with your 4 minutes?
I want to begin by correcting the record in several important respects, Your Honor. May I do that?
Sure. And if you go over, it's okay. Then you'll make certain you answer Judge Cunningham's question.
Okay. Let me start with Judge Cunningham's question. Can I hear it again, please?
Oh, sure. Could you address these mootness questions? I think you heard the other counsel being asked a series of questions on an issue-by-issue basis with respect to mootness. I wanted you to address those and respond accordingly.
Okay. First, I seem to concur with the panel that the issue of bid proposal and preparation clause cannot be. It just can't be. Second, with regard to injunctive relief, the injunctive relief we're specifically looking for is to order the agency to adhere to what it said in the solicitation, which is an award will be made to a single offeror who's timely offered.
Yeah, but we can't do that. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was agreeing with you.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, but as the chief judge indicated previously, that would be moot. I just wanted to make sure I get your response on each issue.
I'm sorry, but I don't understand why it would be moot to order the agency to follow the terms of solicitation.
Because the solicitation is canceled. According to the government, the solicitation is constructively canceled, and they are no longer actively considering any awards under that solicitation. So why? We certainly can't order the government to award the contract to someone, right? They can decide to withdraw a solicitation.
Well, you can do what you always do, which is to order them to adhere to the law and to their own solicitation terms. That's the most common relief of all in a bid protest. But, Your Honor, today is the first day in all the briefings that take place in this case and below when I've heard the government say that the solicitation was constructively canceled. Constructively is one of those words like virtually. It means not. Okay? Whenever you can't say that something was canceled, you say it was constructively canceled. Whenever you say that it was virtually canceled, it means it wasn't canceled.
I don't know, counsel. You're appearing virtually. What does that say?
Well, I have no response to that, Your Honor.
Fair enough. Go ahead.
See the point. Thank you very much for pointing that out. Here I am. But as I was saying, today's the first day they've taken that position, and it's a dangerous one. It's a dangerous one, Your Honor. Any time the government can say in any bid protest, even before its appeal, that solicitation is constructively canceled. And then the case goes away. How could that possibly be the law? That would be catastrophic for government contracts if the government could moot its own misconduct by saying we hereby constructively cancel.
Could you have appealed or filed a protest in some way what appears to be the sole source bridge contract that's been awarded to Southern? Was there any avenue for you to contest that award?
The answer to the question, Your Honor, is honestly that was discussed, and it was felt that it would be irresponsible to do that I force the court to decide whether to cut off feeding the troops, which nobody wants. MCHCO provided the service to the government for 27 years, and the idea of seeking an injunction against the bridge contract seemed like it might be considered irresponsible.
Is there a time period for protesting contract in the FAR and the statute?
Before the Court of Federal Claims only latches, Your Honor, which is not a fixed time period, and the six-year limitations period. The Supreme Court actually decided that in the last couple of years that there'd be no bar other than the limitations period and latches.
Now, if we did not agree with you that we could give you the equitable relief that you seek under these circumstances, but we believed that your bid protest or bid preparation fees were not moot, that would require us to nonetheless look behind all of the Court of Federal Claims determinations against you and determine whether they were correct. Is that your understanding of what this court would need to do in order to award you your bid preparation costs?
Absolutely, Your Honor. We have to establish some entitlement on the merits in order to justify bid and proposal preparation costs under the statute. I agree with that.
So the problem you have is, even though I am sympathetic to the fact that this entire procurement process to include the sole source award is disquieting to me, let's say, but I'm not positive that you've convinced me that the Court of Federal Claims erred on its determination that the government did not err when awarding the contract to KOVR in the first place. So that's where you'd have to get me to agree it was an error to award the KOVR in the first place in order for you to get your bid protest costs or bid preparation.
Well, Your Honor, I think that's correct, and you have 80 pages of briefing on that specific subject at this point. I hesitate to think of how long this argument might take if I were to try to ask for indulgence regarding the four issues on the merits that we raised. Frankly, Your Honor, I don't think that some of them are close questions. I think some of them are clearly mistakes on the part of the lower court. But I go into whatever detail the court wants.
Which ones do you think are clear?
What's your strongest one?
I think that the strongest one is the PIA violations. As Judge Dyke already explained, the statute clearly distinguishes between 2101A and 2101B. The court said that only government officials can violate the PIA. It's clearly wrong. And by the way, a very dangerous precedent to say that the PIA, which is the many bulwarks against procurement integrity violations, is limited to being used only against government officials. That's clearly not what the statute says. It's what 2101A says, but it's not what 2101B says. And the lower court's decision, which is on the books right now, has removed one of the great pillars of government contracts integrity.
Counsel, one last question for you. If the government had simply canceled this solicitation, would you be entitled to argue in favor of bid preparation costs under those circumstances if the government had chosen to simply cancel the solicitation?
If the government had done that immediately, we would have filed a separate protest against that. And I think the answer is yes, Your Honor.
So I guess here's my question. When we walk out of here, are you going to go file a protest against the constructive cancellation, since today is, in fact, the first day you learned it's canceled? And I'll go on the record and say there's nothing in anything I read in this case that made it clear to me the government believed it was constructively canceled. So I'll help you in that regard from a timing standpoint. Based on this entire record, I can't imagine how you could have known for certain that it was canceled before the government's representations today to that effect. So now, do you want to go and file a bid protest on the fact that they've canceled it?
I think it's quite possible this court will rule that there is no such thing as a constructive cancellation, especially under these circumstances when the government's trying to get out from underneath the bid protest by that kind of means. So I'm going to wait and see what the court rules, but I'll be ready the day after the court's ruling if the need is there. May I just point out that MCHCO was technically acceptable at lowest price, but there was an error in the government's argument. Michiko was actually literally next in line and waiting for award under the scheme of the solicitation. Also, for Judge Dyke, I have the references to the record that Judge Dyke asked for. I got those while I was listening to my colleague's argument. Judge Dyke, if you look at tab 26 and 29, especially on page 2329 and 2419, you'll see that it wasn't simply a bill that was submitted that was handed over to Southern. It was billing and headcounts, a pricing schedule,
which was attached to the invoice, right?
No, that's not true, Your Honor.
Where does the record tell me that it wasn't attached? Because it appears. Where does the record tell me those things weren't attached to the invoice?
I don't think that there's anything in the record other than my letters to indicate what was attached and what wasn't attached. My letters don't say that they were attached, nor in fact were they attached, Your Honor. I mean, I'm the one who wrote the letter, and I remember that wasn't the case. So you can look at my letter, and you can see from my letter that is not the case. But in addition to that, there was staffing and payroll information. There was a PowerPoint slide on summer hiring, and there was Michiko's union contract. So all of those things were things other than the invoice. And by the way, Your Honor, there'd be no reason to attach any of those things to an invoice. There's no reason, for instance, to attach a PowerPoint presentation about hiring for the summer program to an invoice. That just wouldn't happen.
Okay, Mr. Grayson, I thank all the counsel. This argument has been helpful to the court, and this case is now deemed submitted. So thank you.
From my heart, thank you all very, very much for your extraordinary dog.